Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we start with a vote in the House of Representatives that was quite bipartisan. This is courtesy of John Sexton over at Hot Air with a lot of reporting from Politico as well. The House passed a measure Thursday intended to rebuke the United Nations for a recent anti-Israel resolution. The vote passed overwhelmingly by 342-80, and the language included a not-so-subtle jab at President Obama, who refused to veto the UN resolution. From Politico, quote, "The United States government should oppose and veto future United Nations Security Council resolutions that seek to impose solutions to final status issues or are one-sided and anti-Israel," the House measure states. It also demands that the UN repeal or fundamentally alter the measure it passed. Quote, "We are condemning what happened because we think it's unfair and unjust," said Elliot Engel of New York, the ranking Democrat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, during the debate ahead of the vote. He says throughout its entire history, the state of Israel has never gotten a fair shake from the United Nations. Paul Ryan saying he was stunned that the Obama administration ever allowed the UN to go after Israel, saying, "Do not be fooled. This UN Security Council resolution was not about settlements, and it certainly was not about peace. It was about one thing and one thing only, Israel's right to exist as a Jewish democratic state," unquote. So, Jim, with all the fierce partisan battles we're seeing start up here over Obamacare and spending over Planned Parenthood and whatever else is going to be pretty divisive, good to see at least 100 Democrats coming over here and siding with a strong rebuke to the president here.
Yeah, I think probably a better indicator of it is just the fact there are only 80 people who wanted to vote against it, something that would be seen as, look, this was inevitably going to be seen as a referendum on the late decision by the Obama administration and John Kerry not to do this. And there was only a couple of them who did that. A lot of people noted the it's not like the Democratic bench is deep, but the younger members also did not follow that one, the likes of Anthony Brown of Maryland and folks like that. Folks who want to have a future in the party or seen as having a future in the party decided, you know what, they just did not want to go down that line. I just felt like the whatever your perspective was in the Middle East peace process, this UN resolution was not the right decision, represented a bridge too far for most mainstream Democrats. And you know what? Good. And so for in an era, look, maybe there is a – look, the Trump era might be beginning with the bipartisanship already, Greg.
That would be nice. If you can't agree at least on that, we'd be in real trouble. So good to see us getting off on the right foot with that issue. We'll see if there are others down the line that we'll actually be happy about. Sometimes there is bipartisan agreement, but it's not necessarily something conservatives are excited to see. In this case, it is a good step. So on to the bad martini now. And Jim, one of the things we were really excited about in terms of the Trump cabinet selections was General James Mattis, the retired U.S. Marine Corps general, to be the next Secretary of Defense. He has provided what is sure to be a pretty good catchphrase of ours for some time to come with, "I'm pleading with you with tears in my eyes. If you mess with me, I'll kill you all." That's just good in almost any situation. But there's already a little bit of a rocky honeymoon here, it seems, at least according to reporting from the Washington Post. The honeymoon seems to be ending between retired General James N. Mattis and Donald Trump's transition team amid an increasingly acrimonious dispute over who will get top jobs in the Defense Department and who gets to make those decisions. With only 2 weeks left before Inauguration Day and days before Mattis' Senate confirmation hearing, most major Pentagon civilian positions remain unfilled. Behind the scenes, Mattis has been rejecting large numbers of candidates offered by the transition team for several top posts, according to two sources close to the transition. The dispute over personnel appointments is contributing to a tenser relationship between Mattis and the transition officials, which could set the stage for turf wars between the Pentagon and the White House in the coming Trump administration. Mattis is also pushing for the Trump transition team to allow never-Trump Republicans to serve in the Pentagon, but so far the Trump team is refusing. One position that is a source of tension is Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, a powerful post that oversees all Defense Department intelligence agencies, which includes the NSA and the Defense Intelligence Agency. also a big fight over Undersecretary of Defense for policy. So, Jim, I don't know if General Mattis has busted out that line on the Trump transition officials yet, but they'd probably be wise to give him some elbow room.
Indeed. I think it's just general advice for everyone in the world. If General Mattis has tears in his eyes, it's a bit like Bruce Banner and the Hulk. Don't make him angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. A couple things that are weird about this story. For starters, like the early announcement from the Trump team was that they were going to make their cabinet selections. And then the job of picking the undersecretaries and staffing beneath them, they were going to leave it to the cabinet secretaries. And it was a bit of a change of pace, but one that seemed to make be common sense and to have good potential. You know, if you pick a bad cabinet secretary, then yes, you're in trouble. The bad person will pick other bad people. But if you trust them, then it would seem like it's a formula for, you know, just when a head NFL team hires a head coach and he brings in all of the assistant coaches he's worked with for a long time. There's a chemistry there. Everybody knows each other. Less likely to be friction and things like that. You know, this seemed like a good plan, and it seems to be going awry at the Pentagon. And it seems, which is unnerving, because I think you can say Mattis was one of the most, if not universally applauded, then I think very widely applauded selections of the Trump cabinet. And Flynn is perhaps the one who most Michael Flynn, the national security advisor, is the one who I think people are particularly wary of. And the idea that Michael Flynn and Mattis don't see eye to eye, you know, you got to let Mattis make his own decisions. You got to let Mattis have the people he wants. And it sounds like he doesn't like any of the people. Now, I don't know if this means that they're Michael Flynn clones or whether he just doesn't see them as his guys. You know, there are a lot of times the media has said, oh, the Trump transition is in trouble and, you know, they're in disarray. And it's been overstated. This sounds like a genuine problem. And that I don't know whether it's going to require Trump to step in and do something and kind of, you know, sort it out or something like that. Or whether this is a job for Priebus or somebody else in the Trump team to kind of sort these sorts of things. Very strong-willed people here, but all in all, you'd want the Secretary of Defense to have the people he likes and trusts and looks forward to working with. And I don't know if you want to emulate the team of rivals approach to every branch of the government.
No, probably not. And you point out in the Morning Jolt, you cover the Mattis story as well, and even more extensively than Jim Woolsey, who is the former CIA director, was in the Clinton years, but has certainly been pretty hawkish on a lot of things. A lot of Republicans highly respect him. He's resigned now from the transition, basically saying he's never been consulted. And given the amount of chit-chat about intelligence during the past few weeks, the fact that he's not been consulted on much is kind of a head scratcher too.
Two serious ones that are compared to the usual media hysteria. The usual response, if you put this out here, Greg, is mostly, well, they're not really on board with Trump or something. Well, you know, you think Mattis was the defense secretary pick, so you think that, you know, this is not the usual, oh, well, he's a liberal or you know, no, Mattis is not. And there were not a lot of CIA directors willing to come out and say, I think Trump, I'm behind Trump. And so when you hear that guy come out and say, look, I'm not in the transition anymore, you guys aren't consulting with me, it's more than a little unnerving.
All right, let's move on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, there's been quite a bit of chatter for a number of months, if not years, about potential challenges not coming from Democrats to Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz. He was not really the party choice when he first ran for Senate in 2012. He scored an upset over David Dewhurst in the Senate runoff and then easily won the seat that November. Then, of course, he famously refused to endorse Trump at the convention this past summer, and that really got the chatter going. Some folks think Congressman Mike McCall could end up challenging him in 2018. Others think that somebody else might do it, and that somebody else might be Matthew Dowd. This is from Abby Livingston over at the Texas Tribune. Matthew Dowd, an Austin-based television news commentator and former George W. Bush strategist, is mulling an independent challenge to U.S. Senator Ted Cruz. I don't know what I will do, he told the Texas Tribune, but I am giving it some thought, and I appreciate the interest of folks. Dowd said this has been a draft effort as prominent members of both parties have approached him to run against Cruz. And Dowd is a guy who started off as a Democrat. He worked for Lloyd Benson and then Lieutenant Governor Bob Bullock down in Texas, eventually gravitating over to George W. Bush in the late 90s and then working on both of Bush's presidential campaigns and for the Republican National Committee. He's on ABC quite a bit. He's often harshly critical of Republicans and certainly is critical of Donald Trump. Here's his analysis, though, of Ted Cruz. Quote, I think Ted is vulnerable, but I don't think Ted's vulnerable in the Republican primary, and I don't think Ted is vulnerable to a Democrat in the general. I think a Democrat can't win in the state. So that suggests that Dowd would run as an independent. And if he won, which party would he caucus with in the Senate? I would caucus with neither party, he said. I think the system is broken. He's in no rush to make a decision. Jim, I think there's a lot of clues in there that this probably isn't going to happen. But if I'm Ted Cruz, there might be some names that worry me. I don't think this is one of them.
Be careful, Greg. Don't underestimate Dowd mania. There are some folks on the right who really, really grind their teeth when it comes to Dowd. I don't know whether he deserves all of that, but it seems safe to say that this is a guy who is, I don't know if you want to say the least conservative former George W. Bush advisor, but certainly one who is not afraid to deviate from the rest of the party. The kind of Republican figure that the mainstream media is very comfortable embracing and having in the studio and in the fact of ABC. I believe his title is ABC political director now, right?
He's way up there now.
Okay, so I mean, he gets the George Stephanopoulos seal of approval.
That'll help in Texas.
Some might say, look, this shows that ABC is balanced. They have the former Clinton advisor Stephanopoulos as their main anchor of their Sunday show, and they've got Dowd as their main analyst. But look, it's really no surprise that Dowd detests Trump. And what's more is that more than most, he really kind of went off on some of his the supporters, the Trump base, and a lot of folks said, particularly during Hillary's basket of deplorables, look, it's one thing to rip the political candidate. When you start ripping the other supporters, you can say whatever you want, but it's uncomfortable if you ever need to try to win the votes of those supporters. Like, say, if you want to run for Senate someday. You and I had talked about the possibility of Ted Cruz getting a Senate challenger in this coming cycle. He was, for Trump, then he was against Trump, then he was for Trump, then he was against Trump, then he said vote your conscience, then he was for Trump. That undoubtedly ruffled some feathers and left some Texas Republicans less than fully enamored of him. But all things considered, of all the fears that Ted Cruz can have, I don't think he's not waking up in a cold sweat thinking about Matthew Dowd.
Fairly safe. And that'd be a lonely caucus for Matthew Dowd, not caucusing with either party. Jim, while a lot of folks are wondering what will happen in the Texas Senate race in 2018, we received a statement via email this morning that a true legend and a true American hero will not be running for re-election in Texas in 2018. Sam Johnson, many people know, has been a member of Congress from Texas, first elected in 1990. Prior to that, he served 29 years in the Air Force, flew combat missions in Korea and Vietnam, endured nearly 7 years as a prisoner of war at the Hanoi Hilton, including 42 months in solitary confinement. After all that, he came back, built his own business, served in the Texas State Legislature, and then, of course, elected to Congress. He'll be 88 years old 2 years from now, so it makes perfect sense that he's ready to hang it up. But what a life of service to America.
I echo everything you said there, Greg. There are a lot of times you kind of roll your eyes. You get cynical about people in public office. The old joke, how do you know a politician is lying? Their lips are moving. But there are good people in politics, and we shouldn't forget that. And there are genuine heroes. And I think we probably would argue that he's more heroic for what he did before he entered office than what he did in office. And maybe that's the way things ought to be. But that doesn't preclude the fact that there are good people in elected office and in politics who want to make the country a better place. And hopefully there'll be someone of, if not equivalent caliber and character, then hopefully comparable one to replace him in the Congress after this.
Heavily Republican district, so it should be expected the Republicans would keep that. In addition to all of his personal qualities, I just looked it up, Jim. Sam Johnson, lifetime 97.43 rating from the American Conservative Union. So pretty good track record there as well.
I can live with that.
Yeah, I could too. Jim, have a good weekend. Talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us. Have a great weekend, everyone, and join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.